Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. We have a huge show for you today, so let's take a quick preview. First, America is unsafe, says the CEO of Starbucks. More information on the Caitlin Armstrong little road adventure to Costa Rica. If this is true, this is the worst mom of the year, possibly the century. Hollywood, apparently all perverts reside there. I love stories like this. Update on a case that we talked about last year, kind of confusing. And then a judge gone wild? Maybe. And then our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. All right, aficionados, you know the drill. Subscribe if you haven't done so already. Like the video if you do. Hit that bell for notifications. All right, let's open the docket for July 15th, 2022. First, citing safety concerns, Starbucks will be closing 16 retail locations nationwide before the end of July. In a video of an alleged internal company meeting, now interim CEO Howard Schultz could be heard criticizing officials at the local, state, and federal levels for failing to fight crime and address mental illness. Now, let me tell you what he said, and then you can watch it for yourself. It has shocked me that one of the primary concerns that our retail partners have is their own personal safety. Schultz can be heard saying, America has become unsafe. Schultz blamed elected leaders of these cities where the stores are closing at the state and federal level. These government leaders, mayors, governors, and city councils have completely abdicated their responsibility in fighting crime and addressing mental illness. And just so you don't think Scott's making it up, take a listen to this.
And I don't have to spend too much time on what's going on in the country and how America has become unsafe. But you all read the press release the last couple of days about the fact that we are beginning to close stores that are not unprofitable. But we're closing stores as a result of the co-creation sessions that we've had. Almost 60 now, 25 in the SSC and the rest in the field. And we had one yesterday in San Antonio. But in all of those sessions, it has shocked me that one of the primary concerns that our retail partners have is their own personal safety. And then we heard the stories that go along with it about what happens in our bathrooms. The issue of mental illness, the issues of homelessness, and the issues of crime. And Starbucks is a window into America. We have stores in every community, and we are facing things in which the stores were not built for. And so we're listening to our people and closing stores, and this is just the beginning. There are going to be many more.
Schultz goes on to discuss the staff's concern related to issues around mental health, illness, homelessness, and crime, which she said is the catalyst for Starbucks stores' closures. Specifically, Schultz pointed to the concerns over ongoing drug use in the bathrooms. Shocking. Shocking, shocking. Can you imagine that? Your employees don't want to go to an area that is unsafe, where anything goes in the city, and the police, based upon direction from the elected officials, aren't going to arrest anybody, or the police are going to figure out they're going to get sued for moving the unhoused or telling some drug addict, I don't care where you go, but you can't stay here. Yeah. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here. Crime creates poverty. If the area is not safe, people will not come to that area. Businesses will leave or go out of business. You have to have safe communities. Otherwise, poverty is created. Something to think about. Next, a little update on Caitlin Armstrong. You know, the alleged murderer, yoga teacher, posed as a woman by the name of Ari to a man named Teal Ackerson that she met outside a tattoo shop while on the run. She told him that she had not healed from a recent breakup when he tried to kiss her, and she said that she wasn't ready. She failed to tell him that she was obviously suspected of shooting professional cyclist Ann Mariah Wilson after discovering Wilson was secretly dating her boyfriend. Now, Ackerson said he was stunned to see the old photos of Armstrong after she was arrested and allegedly underwent plastic surgery to change her appearance. He said that Armstrong had undergone a facelift, and it had also been speculated that she had changed her nose to try and evade investigators. Now, Ackerson says he now realizes Armstrong's insistence on hanging out in secluded areas now suddenly makes sense. Police say that Armstrong shot Wilson after discovering that she was having an affair with her cyclist boyfriend, Colin Strickland. Now, Wilson was discovered dead in an apartment in Austin, Texas on May 11th with two bullet holes in the head and one in the chest. Armstrong's black Jeep Grand Cherokee car was spotted driving past Wilson's friend's home where the gravel bike champion had been staying. Search warrants have revealed that Armstrong visited a gun range with her sister before the killing and was given $450,000 by Strickland. He also admitted to purchasing the two firearms between the end of 2021 and the start of 2022 for himself and Armstrong. Now, shell casings from the gun labeled 9mm were found in the room where Wilson was shot just moments after returning from an outing with Strickland. Authorities have revealed that the yoga teacher paid for a nose job and dyed her hair brown after fleeing the United States using her sister's passport to fly from Newark, New Jersey to Costa Rica. This gentleman explained that he was aware of the case, but the change in her appearance meant he didn't pay any attention to it. He initially spoke to her outside of a tattoo shop, and they ultimately exchanged numbers and they saved it their phones. He put in their Ari tattoo before the pair smoked cannabis and spent time together, speaking up until their 3 days before she was arrested. He continued to say that Ari was a strange person. I met her outside the studio shop. Her friends were getting tattoos, and she was waiting out there on the bench, and we were having a beer at the lounge. It became apparent that she was trying to have a conversation, trying to get to know me, so I began talking to her more, and we ended up sharing numbers. We wanted to go out to different places. We went to with a bunch of different spots, but most of the time she wanted to be at a secluded spot, not around a lot of people. He says he didn't put any of it together. You wouldn't imagine it after it all happened, and I heard that she was really doing and running from it. Made sense why she didn't want to be seen. Just a little more information. He added that Armstrong had a bandage on her nose, which she claimed was from a surfing accident, and he didn't recognize the pictures put out by police. Teal admitted he only realized that Ari was Armstrong after looking at her post-surgery images. After her arrest, Armstrong admitted that she had been going as Ari and was deported to Houston. She was taken into custody at the Travis County Jail and being held on a $3.5 million bond. You just never know who you're dealing with these days. You need to make sure you check people out. Hopefully, they're not on the run, have warrants for their arrest, but the only way you're going to be able to find out is go to crimetalksearch.com. Please, go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship, you're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right. We have a Mother of the Year award, maybe possibly the mother of the decade or the century. The mother of the 10-year-old Ohio girl who crossed state lines to obtain an abortion has defended her daughter's 27-year-old confessed rapist who, that's right, raped her daughter. She's defending him. Now, the mom spoke to Telemundo while hiding behind the door of their Columbus, Ohio apartment that was also listed as the home of the alleged rapist, Gerson Fuentes, an illegal immigrant from Guatemala. The woman stated, "She's my daughter." The mom, who refused to give her name, confirmed to Telemundo that the girl would have been just 9 when she was abused and impregnated. The mom continued and said, "She's fine. Everything that she is saying against him is a big lie. She insisted of Fuentes, who confessed during a police interview to raping the youngster at least twice, according to the court records and officials. Now, the defensive mom, who hit her face when speaking to Telemundo in Spanish, insisted that she had not been the one to file charges against her young daughter's abuser. The shocking case came to light when the girl was taken across state lines to terminate the pregnancy in Indiana on June 30th. We're not going to get into the politics of it all, but ladies and gentlemen, that young girl should not go back with that mom if she is not going to protect that child. That's routine. That's the case. I've had cases like that where you think, really, you're going to defend your new husband slash boyfriend over what the children are saying? Now, don't get me wrong. Kids can make up stories and things can be fabricated. But when they have basically DNA evidence that he was the father and he confessed, I'm going to lean on the side that he was doing something inappropriate with that 9-year-old child. Ladies and gentlemen, that's right, 9-year-old child. What is it with Hollywood? Are all the perverts out there? Well, a co-executive producer and writer for the long-running NBC sitcom Scrubs has been arrested on multiple charges of sexual assault. Eric Weinberg allegedly targeted young women in public places under the guise of being a photographer, offering them work. Now, detectives from the Los Angeles Police Department said the writer would sexually assault the women during such photo shoots, which took place in his own residence. Now, Weinberg was arrested at around midday on Thursday in the Los Feliz area of Los Angeles and was charged with several counts of sexual assault, including rape. His bail has been set at $3.2 million. Now, the LAPD said that Weinberg's arrest was related to crimes committed in LA between 2012 and 2019, though detectives believe there are additional unidentified victims that could date back to the early 1990s. Now, as stated, Weinberg was a Hollywood producer, writer, and appears to have targeted women in grocery stores, coffee shops, and other public places, according to the LAPD spokesperson. And it's alleged that he would approach the women who were in their 20s and 30s under the guise of being a photographer and would set up a photo shoot with them. Isn't that convenient? Once the women were in his residence, he would then sexually assault them during the photo shoot. Ladies, be smart. Just like that Harvey, you know, Harvey Weinstein guy, yeah, used to do the same by asking them to come over to the old casting couch for an audition. Let me assure all the young people of the world, this is not how legitimate business is conducted. Business is not conducted in a hotel room. Business is not conducted by, hey, why don't you come up to my suite later and we can talk about your future. Most businesses are not conducted at home. Be smart. Be smart. Okay? Be smart. Maybe 1 in 1 million people are discovered as a model, as an actress, working at the grocery store. 99.99999% will not be. All right, I love videos like this. Check out this video, the moment a trio of Florida home invaders frantically reverse course after the resident, well, he defends himself and blasts at them with his own firearm. The Escambia County Sheriff's Office footage shows the men gathering and chatting in front of the residence on July 7th before one of them opens the door and shoves the homeowner inside. Two of the suspects barge in, while a third can be seen standing guard outside what appears to be a firearm. Deputy said the homeowner dropped a gun he was holding while trying to fend the attack and that the pistol was picked up by one of the intruders. But the victim managed to scramble to another part of the house where he kept additional firearms and began shooting at his assailants. Gunfire can be heard exploding on the Ring camera. Look at that. Isn't that beautiful? Followed by all three invaders scampering out the home and away from the scene, according to police. They climbed into a nearby getaway car, being driven by a fourth unidentified suspect who fled, and using the footage, cops identified three of the four suspects and arrested two of them. DeTorrance Hawkworth, 20, Antonio DeWayne Dean Jr., 18, were both picked up and now face a slew of charges, including home invasion and illegal possession of a firearm. Joseph Roman Sanders remains at large, and deputies are still trying to identify a fourth suspect. Sheriff Chip Simons said the victim will not face any charges for shooting at the men and backed the rights of the homeowners to defend themselves. The sheriff said, quote, "If someone breaks into my front door, barges in and attacks me and my family, they're going to get shot, the sheriff said. I afford that same consideration to the residents of my county. Boy, you got to love that. A couple of things that we learned from this, ladies and gentlemen. One, don't go into property where you're not invited. The homeowner could be, you know, armed. And even if he loses one firearm in the incident, he has others stashed nearby. And guess what? You could have a friendly sheriff like this that's going to say, of course, I'm going to let you defend your property and your family. Rule of thumb here, ladies and gentlemen, don't go places you're not invited. Don't try to take things that don't belong to you. You could get shot at. Do you remember that terrible accident last year that we talked about where six University of Southwest student athlete golfers were killed? And it was originally thought that the 13-year-old boy was driving a truck. Well, it turns out the teen's dad, who had meth in his system, was behind the wheel during the horrific fatal accident. Now, the crash occurred last year in West Texas in March, about 8:17 p.m., and left six athletes ages 8 to 22 and one 26-year-old male coach dead after a 2007 Dodge pickup truck veered across the center line and into the Ford van carrying the team who had just competed in a tournament. Two students survived, but were seriously injured. Shortly after the accident, authorities from the National Transportation Safety Board said the 13-year-old, who did not have a license, was the driver of the pickup at the time of the head-on collision. However, after a more thorough investigation, NTSB is reversing its story in a preliminary report indicating the teenage boy's 38-year-old father was actually the driver. When the authorities tested blood, they found methamphetamines. They did not specify how much of the drug was in the system or whether it would have impacted his ability to operate a vehicle. The NTSB says that they used DNA to reach the new conclusion. Probably blood from the steering wheel or something to that effect is normally the way those things come about. Both the 13-year-old and the father also died in the accident. The NTSB also points out there's no evidence to suggest the crash was caused by a sudden flat tire or any other catastrophic incident that could have caused the crash. Next on the docket, judge has gone wild. It's been a while since we've talked about a judge like this. A West Virginia judge was accused of waving a handgun, a Colt 45 to be exact, at lawyers in a courtroom during a case over royalties, where he mocked the defense security team for wearing a sissy-ass purse and carrying smaller guns than him. Now, attorney Lauren Vernado filed a report to the FBI against Circuit Court Judge David Hummel, Jr., who oversees cases in the New Martinsville area, after he allegedly pointed a gun at her and her team on March 12th, according to the attorney. Now, she represented the EQT production company against landowners suing over the royalty payments from fossil fuels extracted on their land. The attorney also claims that Hummel began mocking her for having a security team following her around. "Aren't me and my guns and security enough?" Hummel allegedly asked the lawyer as he took out his Colt 45 pistol and pointed at her and her team. My guns are bigger than your security's guns." Now, the judge, who Vernado and her team accused of having a conflict of interest in this case, given his ties to the gas company acquired by EQT, also ridiculed the defense security team, according to records. "I got this man here carrying a man purse, which I make fun of him every damn day for wearing such a sissy-ass contraption," he allegedly said, referring to a bag one of the security members was holding. "And I hear he has blood coagulant," he reportedly added. "I have blood coagulant up here too. I've got lots of guns, like bigger ones too," apparently the judge said. Hummel has repeatedly denied that any such event took place inside his courtroom. While the case is currently under investigation by the Judicial Investigation Commission of West Virginia, "there is no incident," he apparently told a newspaper. "I absolutely, categorically deny I had a gun that day in the courtroom." The judge, however, did later admit that he has a gun inside the courtroom, but continued to deny that he ever pulled it out and pointed it at the lawyers. "It was secreted in a drawer on the bench. I never have shown my 1911, which is a firearm, at the trial lawyers whatsoever. The attorney, Ms. Virando, and her team, however, stand by their allegations they filed against the judge, saying the incident has left her traumatized. All right. Finally today, our dumb criminal of the day. A Florida county commissioner with a lead foot dropped his title twice. You know, the old, don't you know who I am? Back-to-back speeding incidents declaring, I run the county, in one of the traffic stops. Footage of the case. As you can see in the encounter, Joe Mullins was in a red Ferrari when he was pulled over by a Florida Highway Patrol trooper on June 19th, according to reports. Mullins has been traveling 92 miles per hour in a 70-mile-an-hour zone on Interstate 95. As the trooper is talking to Mullins, the trooper stops and says, I'm sorry. Mullins then says, I run the county, so I know how that works. You run the county, the trooper replies. Mullins replies, yeah, I'm the chairman of the county commission, according to dash cam footage. Now, the trooper then continues to explain the citation before Mullins is seen zooming away at the end of the encounter. Now, on June 2nd, Mullins was pulled over in a Mercedes-Benz SUV for going 89 and a 60, according to reports. And after the two troopers talked with Mullins, they go back to the police car, and one trooper says he says he's a county commissioner, to which the other officer replies, yeah, well, he's getting a ticket. There's been reports that the trooper who spoke to Mullins can be heard threatening to arrest Mullins at one point if he gets out of his SUV. Now, according to the Highway Patrol dispatch notes obtained by various news organizations, Mullins stated, it would be a career-ending move if I arrested him for failing to obey a lawful order. In separate letters to the judges seeking leniency for both incidents, Mr. Mullins claims he was in a rush and not paying attention to how fast he was driving. Okay. Once again, just dumb, okay? Couple things. This guy's a public service, a county commissioner, right? Got to do it better and cleaner than everybody else. He sets the example. Shouldn't be doing the old, oh, don't you know who I am? I run the county. And next thing, why is a government official driving around in a Ferrari as a public official? Now, who knows? Maybe he made a bunch of bones in the private sector. Now he's giving back, but really? All the more reason that when the cop pulls you over, you are humble. That's it. What do we say? There's two types of people in the world, those that are humble and those that are about to be. I think Mr. Mullins has been humbled. All right, that's all we have for today. But before you go into the weekend, before we close the docket, that's right, go check out that new merch. I'm telling you, top seller. You're going to want to have one. All right, thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.